Yeah, as a prophetic statement is regarding Damascus. He says, behold, pay attention, Damascus is revolting and corrupt and will be removed from inhabited cities. And she shall totally and actually become a twisted and tangled heap of rubble. This is the Yeshaya, Isaiah 17:1. Syria is currently a client of Iran, just as is Iraq, thanks to America's ill-fated invasion. By way of Hezbollah, which means Allah's party, the religious regime in Iran also controls Lebanon, creating a land crescent from Iran into northern Israel, facilitating the Islamic invasion that prophecy predicts, called the Magog War. A thoughtful review of the whole of Scripture indicates that in 2027, after the affirmation of a peace treaty with many in the fall of 2026, Muslims will disregard their promises of peace and form the Magog Federation. It will include a united Iran-Iraq, Syria-Pakistan, the recently formed Islamic states in the Caucasus region of the former Soviet Union, and Turkey. Gog, a Muslim cleric and warlord from the area west of the Caspian Sea, will ally them with Egypt, Libya, Algeria, and the Sudan, and collectively Allah's party, which is currently headquartered in Damascus, will attack Israel using American weapons. Over the past decade under Bush and Obama, the United States has fundamentally changed the balance of power in the region by providing Muslims with 25 times more military hardware than has been given to God's chosen people. Yahweh's use of a roar in this next statement could be a reference to Lebanon. Not only will Hezbollah attack Israel by marching through this once proud country, known to the world for its soaring cypress trees, which is what Aurora means, it has become a casualty of the Syrian war, yet another nation devastated and impoverished by Islam. Aurora also depicts the millions of Muslim refugees who have become destitute and impoverished outcasts as from Israel, who are now living in the Jordanian and Lebanese refugee camps. Furthering this, Aurora was a town in Amman, which is Jordan today. The realization that Aurora is related to Aruts, meaning dreadful and horrible wadi, we are compelled to see Mecca, the birthplace of Islam, Israel's most ardent foe. It was in a dreadful and horrible wadi that we find Mecca. Similarly, Aritz speaks of ruthless terrorism, which is Islam's signature act. Perhaps even more revealing, Arud, which the theological word book for the Old Testament affirms is the root of Aurora, it's used in Job, which is Job 39:5, to depict a wild ass. Yahweh has already told us that Ishmael's descendants, today's Muslims, and that they claim him to be their forefather, will be wild asses of men. Their hand will be against their brother, and their brother's hand will be against them, just as we're witnessing in Damascus. And they will live in hostility with the entire world. So Aurora could well be a play on words, to include the mythical Palestinians who consider themselves outcasts, to include Lebanon and Jordan, where these destitute people have been impoverished and repudiated, in addition to being inclusive of wild asses of men, making the connection to Islam through Ishmael. Just as Eliezer of Damascus and Ishmael of Hagar were rejected, both expressly excluded from the covenant, Yahweh remains consistent. The next line reads, abandoned and forsaken will be the inhabited regions of Aurora. Aurora could be the outcasts, a reference to the mythical Palestinian refugees, of the Arnon Valley in Ammon, a reference to Jordan, of the cypress tree, which would be a reference to Lebanon, of the repudiated and destitute who are laid bare and those stripped of all pretense, of the impoverished, vulnerable, and those without resources who act like wild asses, a reference to Islam through Ishmael, as well as to the consequence of Islam, which is impoverishment. For they will be roaming animals, fighting in military militias who are dispossessed, Adir. They will be abandoned as a group. They will be abandoned as a group because they have collectively missed the way, having failed miserably. And then there will be no one to terrorize. Now, there's two different ways that Adir can be diacritically marked. The Meserites want you to believe that they will be flocks of goats and herds of donkeys. But Adir, since it so adroitly speaks of the actual conditions we are witnessing, the same three letters can be rendered roaming animals fighting in militant militias who were abandoned because they have missed the way. It's such an appropriate rendering. Why go to herds of goats and donkeys? This goes on to say that, and then there will be no one to terrorize, Ain Sharad, none to terrify. Yes, they will continue to roam as animals. They will continue to fight in their militant militias as jihadists and mujahideen. But ultimately, once they have destroyed Damascus, once they have destroyed Syria, there'll be no one left for them to terrorize. When they have no one left there to terrorize, guess where those terrorists are going to aim their weapons? Israel. This is what God says next. Again, he is speaking in first person. It's an interesting transition, recognizing what we've just considered. So the fortified place will cease to exist because of Ephraim. Now, Ephraim is an interesting word. Ephraim speaks of a divided Yisrael. Ephraim is used by Yahweh to speak of the northern kingdom, which was separate from Yehuda and Benjamin, and how the northern kingdom chose to form alliances with evil nations. And as a result of doing that, they were destroyed by the Assyrians. Yehuda was spared the Assyrian assault because Hezekiah read the Torah and decided that he would do what Yahweh had suggested, which is to celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, and that he would also rid Yehuda, which is now referred to as Judah, the southern kingdom, of all religious imagery. And he did. And the Assyrians who came to assault Yehuda died. 185,000 of them. And yet they did not experience that same fate with Ephraim. Ephraim speaking specifically of the divided Yisrael of the northern kingdom serves as a metaphor for that, for Yisrael excluding Yehuda and Jerusalem. It means a heap of ashes, commonly translated Ephraim, the son of Joseph, the brother of Manasseh, used to depict the, as I say, the northern kingdom encompassing 10 of the 12 tribes. So the fortified place, speaking of Damascus and what it represents to the Islamic world, will cease to exist because of, on account of, Ephraim, this northern kingdom, part of Israel divided. Along with the government out of Damascus, including the remnant of Aram, of Syria, for being similarly vehement and burdensome. Now, the consequence of Damascus falling, God said it happened on behalf of Ephraim. Now, the northern kingdom was not good to Yahweh, but God made a promise to all of Jacob's sons, to the whole of Israel, and has made a commitment to reunify Israel, not only with Yehuda, but with himself. And so on behalf of the most rebellious of his children, he says that Damascus will cease to be. But it says it's not just Damascus, but also the remnant of Syria. And Syria was presented here by Aram. It means Greater Syria or Assyria, including Mesopotamia, and therefore inclusive of today's Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, all of which are controlled by Iran as a result of America's invasion of Iraq. And he says that they're going to be destroyed on behalf of Ephraim because they are similarly vehement and burdensome. Kabut. They're fanatical and onerous, abundantly wealthy, and overly glorified, from hardened and, this is kabod, hardened and grievous, ignorant and dim-witted, hard-headed and stupid, enraged and troublesome. This is the same Greater Syria that the Islamic terrorist group of Sunni Muslims from Iraq, called the Islamic State of Iraq and now Syria, al-Sham. It is al-Sham is the Greater Syria. It is a unified Islamic world similar to what transpired when Damascus was under the control of Sunnis. In this case, it is the Shias that are failing because they are similarly vehement and burdensome. The children of Yisrael shall actually continue to exist, prophetically declares Yahweh of the vast array of spiritual messengers and envoys. All of this is happening because Yisrael shall not be destroyed. God's made promises to Yisrael. He made promises in Hosea to both Ephraim and Yisrael. And the fact that he uses them separately and is going to now introduce Jacob here in a moment, that he's speaking of a Yisrael divided and a Yisrael unified, and ultimately a completely unified Yisrael, which is the term Jacob, because it speaks of the father of all 12 tribes. So Ephraim, the rebellious northern kingdom, is going to see the fall of not only Damascus, but of Assyria, of Greater Syria, of Shiite Islam. And it is because the children of Yisrael shall continue to exist. God is professing to the world 2,700 years ago that try as they will, the 1.5 billion Muslims are not going to eradicate Israel and his chosen people. Back in a moment. So, if you're feeling spry today and you say, you know, there's one way to disprove the testimony of Yahweh, prove that he's really not God, prove that that we ought not consider his Torah and prophets, that we should disregard all of that, then give some credence to the destruction of Israel. It'll go along with the Muslims. Give them more American weapons. Appease them by thinning Israel at the waist, by forcing Israel to give up Gaza and the West Bank. Yep. Take the conspiracy theory that Jews are the root of all evil in the world, and try to, with 1.5 billion angry Muslims that are anti-Semitic surrounding Israel, take the easy position and continue to provide them with more weapons, give them more wealth by not developing internal oil reserves and enriching the OPECers. Continue down that route and see if you can create a scenario where Israel is destroyed. Disprove Yahweh's testimony. And Muslims tried during the Holocaust. Muslims tried again during the war for Israel's independence. They lost. They tried again during the Six-Day War. They lost. They tried again in the surprise attack on the Yom Kippur War. They lost. They've tried the wars of terrorism against the Jews, the intifadas. They've lost. And now, armed to the teeth, they want to attack Israel. They want to claim the West Bank and Gaza so that Israel will be defenseless. God's saying, they're going to lose. If your side is the American side that wants to give the Muslims their own independent state, you're on the wrong side. You're going to lose. If you're on the side of the Islamic jihadists, providing them with weapons, providing them with cover, enabling them, God's saying, you're going to lose. I'm here to tell you, and I'm telling you, 2,700 years in advance, Damascus is going to fall because they're corrupt. And these marauding terrorists are going to be in a place where they have no one left to terrorize. Why? Because I'm doing this on behalf of a divided Yisrael, because I'm going to unify Yisrael and I'm going to spare them, and they are not going to be destroyed. They will continue to endure forever. God's putting it right out there on the line. Why don't you tell me another group of people, a minority who has survived for 4,000 years, who has returned to their homeland, even though they're threatened and outnumbered 1,000 to 1 by their enemies? Why don't you tell me another? Anyone? I can't find one. There's no one with this history. And this history is important because God is saying that I am not going to allow them to be destroyed. Which means, by the way, that he had to bring them back together. There had to be a unified Yisrael for this prophecy to be effective. Because he's going to go on and talk about this unified Yisrael of Jacob being thinned. Which means that after the northern kingdom was destroyed and the 10 tribes hauled into captivity by the Assyrians, and after the southern kingdom of Yehuda was ultimately destroyed by the Babylonians and with many Jews temporarily hauled off into captivity, that Yehuda would return. And they did. And that they would survive, even though they would be dispersed among the nations, something that Yahweh also predicted. And that they would come back and that they would make their land bloom. Once again, even though it had been salted by the Romans, that they would return to it and they would make their land bloom and that they would not be eradicated by those who hate them. Tells you whose side Yahweh was on. He's doing this for Yisrael. So if you are opposed to Jews, you're opposed to Yisrael, you want to blame all manner of things on Jews, you're on the wrong side. You're in opposition to God. That's not a side that I would advise anyone to be on. But God says the children of Yisrael shall actually continue to exist. And he says that in the context of Damascus and Assyria, greater Syria, failing, falling, being destroyed. One thing leads to the other. But that's not the end of what God has to say. He's not done. He's going to make another statement that is even more profound prophetically. And we're going to consider it when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. Please stay with us. In all fairness, the passage that I just read can be translated very differently. However, to translate it differently, you really have to remove it from context and to ignore everything that Yahweh has said. But it's true that Kavod could be rendered the glory of being similar, glorified, if you will. To do so, of course, what it means, because here's how it's used. I'll read the passage and tell you where Kavod is, because I want to be open with you. In fact, not only open and honest, but it brings up the whole art of translation, of how when you're going to translate something, you've got to look at every potential meaning of the word, and then to render the word in context in a manner that is most consistent with what the discussion as a whole is presenting. So this says the fortified places will cease to exist. So it's talking about the utter destruction of Assyria and of Damascus, and that and is being done on behalf of Ephraim, which was the northern kingdom, divided Yisrael, along with the government of Damascus, the monarchy of Damascus, going to be destroyed, including the remnant of Assyria, for being similarly vehement and burdensome. So God is saying that this is really disgusting. These people are disgusting, and they're going to be nothing but a heap of ruins. And then he says, the children of Yisrael shall continue to exist, prophetically says Yahweh. So it's vehement and burdensome for being similarly, cause, the Hebrew word for in this manner, comparatively. And then is kabod. Now, kabod can be rendered glorious. But what would be glorious about a city becoming a heap of ruins because of marauding bands of terrorists? I mean, it's just utterly stupid. And so you can't translate kabod, glorious, in the context of something becoming a heap of ruins as a result of corrupt individuals. So you have to look, does kabod have other meanings? And you see that it's based upon kabod, and kabod means hardened and grievous, ignorant and dim-witted, hard-headed and stupid, enraged and troublesome. Well, those things all fit, don't they? Be consistent with the entire discussion. So, in all fairness, yeah, you've got to think. You have to look at the word's roots, its entomology, context, and to translate something appropriately, you have to think. God expects us to think. Now, yes, it can be translated, kabod, as good or bad, but all depending on the context. In this case, since Yahweh is speaking about the utter destruction of Damascus and the implications associated with the demise of the Middle Eastern Muslim nations, the most rational approach is to consider the most negative aspects of kabod. So rather than significant and glorious, a more accurate understanding is advanced by examining the etymology of the term, where we learn that its root, kabod and kobed, reveal that the Islamic nations surrounding Israel will cease because the Muslims are vehement in their rage. They're onerous and burdensome in their abuse. They're hardened and grievous in their thinking. They're ignorant and dim-witted in their beliefs. They're hard-headed and stupid as a nation, and thus enraged and troublesome. Those who have been indoctrinated by their religion to seek the destruction of Israel will themselves be destroyed so that Israel might endure. Now, the names of on this list are also revealing. It begins with Damascus, which is the current focus of Islam's intolerance. Sunni jihadists armed with American weapons are murdering, raping, and robbing tens of thousands of Shiites and Christians, while the opposing Shia troops and militias are responding in kind, albeit with Russian and Iranian arms. We are told that the Islamic infighting there will reduce the city to rubble. Aror is next, which is overtly descriptive of Jordan, but through the cypress and the wild ass illusions is a reference which would be inclusive of Lebanon and the world of Islam. They, we are told, will be deserted and forsaken. These places will be abandoned apart from roaming animals who comprise Islamic militias. And even for them, there will no longer be any civilians for them to terrorize, because these places will become uninhabited. Ephraim is the title Yahweh deploys to speak of a divided Yisrael, of the region estranged from him because they forsook the covenant, favoring the kind of international military alliances that have been so devastating for humankind. The northern kingdom was destroyed by Assyria within a generation of its formation, and thereby serves as an example of how not to behave. It began to disintegrate within a generation. It was within 200 years that it was gone. And while all of that is true, at this time and in this context, the 10 tribes which have been scattered are no longer in open rebellion against Yahweh. The long divorce is over. The day of reconciliation is imminent. And therefore, it is for the sake of Yisrael that the government of Damascus ultimately fails, and with it the Muslim Mujahideen on both sides of the conflict. God didn't say that he was going to destroy them, but they will destroy one another. Aram, which could have been translated Syria, so long as readers and listeners realize that this means much more to the Islamic combatants fighting there than the current national boundaries of the Syrian nation. the capital of the Islamic world, as I shared before, after Sunnis bludgeoned Shia Muslims into submission, was Damascus. And their Sham, Syria, comprised the entire region, including today's Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, and Turkey, as well as Iran and Iraq. And it was from Damascus that this unified Islamic caliphate ruthlessly ruled over much of the world, from Spain to northern Africa to India and everything in between. Most of the Sunni jihadists fighting in Syria now are committed to the same result, a unified base from which they want to conquer the entire world so that every soul surrenders to Allah. This image of Syria is the catalyst for Islamic conquest, the throttle for Islamic rage, the sandbox for Islamic jihadists to prove themselves worthy of paradise, the fulcrum upon which either Shia or Sunni Islam will prevail, one over the other. It is the epicenter of the next world war, with alliances divided between the belligerents. Every Muslim within Greater Assyria will suffer because they are universally fanatical and onerous, ignorant and enraged, and they will die, massacring one another so that Yisrael will live. For an alternative view of what we just read, particularly the last statement, the King James Version renders the last verse, "The fortress shall cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom from Damascus, and the remnant of Syria, they shall be as the glory of the children of Israel, saith the Lord of hosts." This applies that the utter destruction of Syria and the heap of twisted rubble that is Damascus will cause Muslims who lived there to become as glorious as the children of Israel. Well, if nothing else, this affirms that English Christians who compose the King James Version hold Israel in very low regard. And they're also willing to change God's name from Yahweh to the title Lord. The American evangelical Christians who sponsored the New Living Translation similarly strove to suggest that they had inherited Israel's former glory when they published, "The fortified towns of Israel will be destroyed and the royal power of Damascus will end. All that remains of Syria will be the fate of Israel's departed glory." Well, I would never be so arrogant as to claim that my translations are perfect, which is why I encourage listeners and readers to verify what you hear for yourself. I can attest that the King James and the New Living Translation are wrong. And it's not that just that they don't know Hebrew. It's that they don't know Yahweh. And thus they don't understand what he's saying. God hates the Christian church and loves the children of Israel. As a result, one will endure and the other will not. One will be brought home and the other will be left behind. Now, speaking of Christians being lost, it is, of course, interesting that the two most significant populations of Christians and in the Muslim Middle East are the Assyrians in Iraq and the Lebanese Falange. They could also comprise part of this remnant of Aram. If so, the Orthodox Christians will be left behind. But particularly and hopefully, in the eye of the storm, they will come home. After concluding his presentation on the future of Syria, Jordan, and Lebanon, as well as the northern kingdom in Israel, particularly focusing on Damascus, Yahweh transitions to a discussion of how the promised land, which is now unified, which is something that would have been inconceivable, writing 2,700 years ago, when the northern kingdom was being systematically destroyed by the Assyrians. Well, this is the result, this narrowing a unified Yisrael, Jacob at its midsection, is the result of a land for peace concession in which Gaza and then the West Bank is given to the Muslims in exchange for useless proclamations of peace, thinning Israel at the waist to less than 20 miles across. Since Gaza is already gone, this will happen in stages. The final act will be the treaty announced by Daniel, which ushers in the seven-year tribulation that starts in November of 2026. Yahweh, speaking through his prophet Yeshayah, predicts, and it will actually come to pass, Wahaya, that in that day, that the size, Hahu Kabud, that the magnitude, that the dimensions, that the value, the volume of Yaqab, who was renamed Yisrael by Yahweh, meaning the one who cannot be swayed or detoured because he supplants his heel, Abraham's grandson, heir to the covenant, the father of the 12 tribes, shall decrease to the point of no longer being sustainable or viable. And the fattest, best protected, and most important place of his body shall be leaned. Okay. God is talking about, first, the Assyrians, which represents now Shia Islam. They're destroyed. God says this is for the sake of Ephraim, which represents the northern kingdom, and Israel divided. That is being done, that occurs for the benefit of, for the sake of Ephraim, the northern kingdom, divided Israel. And that as a result of the entire Shiite world failing, of Assyria failing, of Damascus falling, that Yahweh reaffirms his promise that Israel shall live. And then he transfers to a statement regarding Yaqab, back in a moment. Now I'm going to share with you some of the words that are part of this prophecy so we understand how powerful it is, and then we're going to consider the audacity of saying this 2,700 years ago. So it shall actually come to pass, this is Haya, it shall be in that day that the size, that the magnitude, the dimensions, the volume of Yaqab, and Yaqab here, you know, he's speaking of Ephraim, which represents the northern kingdom of Israel, which is another name for it when they were breaking apart, but then of Yaqab, which is the father of the 12 tribes. This is a united Israel. This is something that would be unimaginable at the time that this prophecy was being given, because in 740 BCE, they were completely severed. They didn't get along on anything. They were now in a position where the northern kingdom was being ravaged by Assyria, and Jerusalem was next. I mean, there was no united kingdom. There was no united Israel. They were divided, and half of Israel was now gone. And yet, this prophecy says that this is that the size of Yaqab, that we've got a united Israel again. Beyond imagination. In fact, this was beyond an imagination before 1967. It wasn't even imaginable when Israel became a nation in 1948, because they didn't have any of the West Bank, they didn't have any of Gaza, they didn't have control of Jerusalem. It was only by being victorious in the Six-Day War that Israel got claim to those things. So prior to 1967, 1968, none of this was even fathomable. But then God is saying very specifically that the size of Israel is going to, and this is a united Israel, is going to decrease to the point that it is no longer sustainable. It's no longer viable. It shall diminish to the point that the state becomes incapable of surviving, being thinned and impoverished so that normal life becomes impossible. Conveyed that through Da'al. And the fattest, best protected, and most important place, the Masham, the waist or the midsection, the most populated area of Yaqab's body, of Yisrael, shall be leaned, made thin, shrink in size. Well, if you look at Israel, its waist, its midsection, is this intersection between Gaza and the West Bank. It's where the United States has already forced them to give up Gaza. If it forced them to give up the West Bank, it will narrow Israel to about 10 to 20 miles wide at its waist. This is where 70% of the population lives. Everyone that is touting this land for peace deal knows that Israel becomes unsustainable the moment that happens. That it's no longer viable as a nation. And here's God putting this in writing 2,700 years ago, when there was no unified Israel. When there was no waste to thin. And think of that. And you're witnessing not only that it happened before our eyes, but you see the connection between that and the this civil war between Sunni and Shia Muslims that is raging in Damascus, and that being presented as the catalyst for all of this. I mean, we could not understand the connection between these things. And particularly the United States, which follows, where God's going to describe the conditions that exist in this country and why the very nation that loots Israel, that forces it to give up its most important strategic area, thinning the nation at the waist, is devastated just the way that Neville Chamberlain's country was devastated by trying to appease the Nazis. It would not have been fathomable even 2 years ago. And now it's being manifest before our eyes. Precise predictions of exactly what's going to occur, how it's going to occur, why it's going to occur, when it's going to occur. And if you can process what God is saying and how profound all of this is, then you recognize that you really ought to pay attention to everything he has to say, because he absolutely knows the future. He knows exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen and why it's going to happen. And he's taken the time to tell us about it for a reason. And the reason is obvious. He wants us to trust him. He wants us to come to know him. He wants us to care enough to consider what he has to say and capitalize upon what he has to offer. That's the purpose of all of this. It's powerful. It's extraordinarily important. And that's why, in the context of Muslims not wanting you to know that Israel and the Jewish people have a 3,500 to 4,000 year history in this land, that's why it's important for you to know the truth. The truth is important. We'll be back tomorrow.